This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, The Promise of Surfing Rainbows. The author, P.D.M. Dulce. And Dale and Pam join us now on Indie Book Publishing, brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Dale.
Hi there, Steve.
Hello, Pam.
Hi, Steve. Hi.
Good to have you both with us.
Glad to be with you.
Dale is with us here in the United States, and Pam is over the big pond, as they say, right?
That's right. I'm in Malta.
Well, I'm going to read a couple things that have been written about The Promise of Surfing Rainbows. You say this: the reason for the book, The Promise of Surfing Rainbows, is to give someone the knowledge of how to create the life of their dreams intentionally. Rainbow surfing is the process whereby you can create the life of your dreams by design. Once you've learned how to surf your rainbow, your deepest desires can be fulfilled. Well, we all need that, that's for sure. We all need to fulfill our dreams. Pam, tell us what the motivation was to write the book.
Quite exciting for me because how many years ago I was really, really wanting to have children, have a family. I was very good at achieving most of the targets I ever wanted, but having a family just didn't happen for me. And one day I was on a bus. I met up with now my good friend Dale, and we were talking how if all these self-help books are so brilliant, how come I still wasn't getting what I wanted in life? And we discussed many, many different books over the next however many years, and then we pinpointed something that we're calling the crucial link, which is the crucial link between two aspects of ancient wisdom that have already improved the lives of millions. Now, one is energy work, which is at the foundation of all holistic therapy, so your Reiki, acupuncture, and everything else, reflexology. Every holistic therapist, at the core of that is energy work. And then there's something else called the law of attraction. Again, thousands of books have been written on that. But there has not been a book that has put the two together in such a way as we do, that explains how to fully capitalize on the law of attraction through energy work. And it was when we discovered this, it was very shortly after that I conceived, and I now have two fantastic babies. And other people who have taken the very simple step through Surfing Rainbows to increase their energy levels, which is a very simple process, through Surfing Rainbows, which is at the core of all holistic therapy, then they can achieve their dreams. And as wild and wacky as it sounds, it really is true and effective. And so much so that we have the likes of the Barefoot Doctor, an expert in energy medicine, saying that Surfing Rainbows is the best way to mindfully manifest miracles. And he's right. I mean, that is an amazing endorsement. We've got probably about 20 or so really inspiring, famous people endorsing Surfing Rainbows because it is that effective.
Well, Dale, the subtitle of this book is Playing with Infinite Potential for Unlimited Possibilities. Again, we all want that, and we need it. And so you have broken your book down, what is surfing rainbows, and then how to start surfing rainbows. Give us some of the keys, some of the things that we need to know about the first part of your book, what is surfing rainbows?
Thanks again, Steve. You're absolutely right. We have broken the book down into a couple parts, but just to back up a little bit to kind of segue Pam was talking about, you know, and the motivation, which will tie into your question here. I myself, you know, have been around the business community forever. I'm in my 60s, and I've studied a lot of positive thinking books and self-help, inspirational, whatever, and all these different things. And my primary motivation for helping and assisting and being a co-author of The Promise of Surfing Rainbows with Pam was because I've got five children, two sets of twin daughters, and four grandkids, and I wanted to be sure that I kind of left them some information or some ideas or some of the things that I found that really worked. And when Pam and I put together the thoughts and the information in The Promise of Surfing Rainbows, like she stated, beyond a shadow of a doubt, we've got a lot of people using it. We have a lot of people endorsing it because it does absolutely work. So what we've always felt in all the books that I've ever read, to me it's important that we explain what is surfing rainbows, the promise of surfing rainbows. And Pam already touched on a couple main elements in the book, the energy aspect and the law of attraction. And combining these two, we've come up with something what we call the crucial link. And once people see that simple crucial link and then in a fun and easy way apply the information, which is the second component in our book, is we feel the information is only worth so much, but if you can apply it and give people some easy, simple, fun ways to incorporate it in their everyday, then truly the promise is they can, as you mentioned, have a life of fulfilled dreams where infinite potential meets unlimited possibilities. I know that sounds like maybe a big statement, but when people start, you know, again, reading and applying it, they'll see exactly what we mean, because we've had a lot of people already prove that what we've stated here is absolutely coming true for them in their lives.
Well, obviously, there are principles here that have to be followed, that there are laws of success, right? Would you call them?
Absolutely, there's laws of success, and we've pinpointed those in our book, and really the laws apply to everyone, just like the law of gravity. You know, no one escapes that, so to speak. So these laws are there, and we're bringing them to the attention of people so they can start utilizing these laws to the fullest so they can truly have a fulfilled life, the life that they want to live.
Pam, give us a little of your view of the second part of the book, the part two, how to start surfing rainbow. So after we've learned what to do, we've got to start. Now, you know, that sounds pretty simplistic, but what are you getting at there?
What we thought is, you know, when you get a book, normally you read it, you put it down, you may put it on the shelf again, you may think you might do it tomorrow, but what we thought we would do is actually say, come on, we're going to give you some help here. We're going to start something called a treasure hunt to your deepest desires. We're going to hold your hand. We're going to take you on a journey of self-discovery. You're not going to be alone. And not only are you going to get your deepest desires at the end, but also on the way, we're going to give you some huge incentives to keep going. Because just think of your January New Year's resolutions. By February, most of them have usually faded out. So we're giving people a huge incentive to keep going. And it's so simple and so easy, but let's hold your hand. Let's give you some support. We've got plenty of teleseminars. We've also got three prizes. Now, these go from... they're about $100 per prize, and there's like a TV, a huge HD TV. There's beautiful angelic artwork print. There's sound music. Each month, everybody who is part of our treasure hunt will be eligible to just even having the book, reading the book, and then if they want to become part of the treasure hunt, they will be eligible to a monthly prize. In fact, what's quite exciting is we've got so many big names who really like our project that the prizes are flooding in. We've got more than for one a month now. It looks like we have one every couple of weeks. And at this rate, we'll probably get them even more than that. So what's exciting then is that we've got all these big names in the industry saying, yeah, Stuffing Rainbows is pretty good. Let's give you some prizes, incentivize people, and let's get this thing moving. So that's... Without going into huge steps as to what the steps are right now, just perhaps know that if you're interested, we have this fabulous treasure hunt with masses of incentives to help you keep going to reach your dreams, whatever they are. In my case, way back when, it was to have babies after 6 years of not being able to have them. Huge business success. I've got people with cancer. I had somebody who had cancer quite severely, and we surfed rainbows. We knew what we wanted to achieve, and how many months later we had the all clear, and across the table, the celebrating table, the girl in question said that surfing rainbows did a lot more for her than her oncologist, and she has the all clear. So it's just, you know, it's heartwarming, it's brilliant. That's what it's all about.
Well, everyone loves prizes, that's for sure. We all we normally don't get that kind of incentive, so
I know.
Right, so that's a great idea.
But do you know what's so exciting? Oh, this is like just so crazy, is that I put the word out that we'd like to do this. We feel so positively about our project. It's not just about helping the individual. This project is about helping, making a massive difference in the world, because not only will we help people on an individual basis, but the project is set to help people who are really at the worst situations in life. We have one of our endorsers, she was homeless, she's then gone to Harvard. I mean, like, this is huge. So we want to help people who are really at the the depths of despair and take them out of that. So our project is not just about the individual, it's about the group, it's about society, it's about, you know, the collective. And when I sent out the emails and contacted some big people about, you know, whether they wanted to give some prizes to support us with our project to make this big, the prizes are flooding in, which is fantastic. So, you know, I say we've got one a month, but actually it's more like 2 a month. My objective is to have one every single day, a prize of $100 every single day for people who are taking the eligible to get this prize, which is huge.
Dale, this statement, our book is a book for anyone, no matter where they came from, their background, or their current situation. That is a universal promise, it sounds like.
Well, and again, maybe it sounds like a little bit over the top, but quite frankly, as we stated earlier, Steve, you know, it's like, again, we talked about the law of gravity, that these laws apply to everyone, right? And it's the same thing here. All we're doing is kind of modernizing or giving a fresh look to really some ancient wisdom and also some modern science that backs up everything that we talk about in the book, where, again, truly, we know the information is very accurate and very spot on, if you want to call that, because as Pam already alluded to, we have all kinds of endorsers from all kinds of walks of life. I mean, we have professionals, non-professionals, therapists, teachers, business owners, moms, grandmas, just every walk of life, all kinds of people already endorsing it. And then we've got all these other people who've read the book now, like you said, stepping forward with all the prizes because they really believe. It's more than just the book, quite frankly, Steve. It's just going to be an entire project or enterprise where we really truly want to help people. And that's our primary motivation here. I know it may sound trite, but we really do believe in and we love helping people to have the best life possible. So we've got all these endorsers, but we've also got a lot of people who are reading the book who are getting incredible results beyond their wildest dreams, that are giving us just story after story of all the successes they're having. So to me, it's a fun and exciting project.
And I'd like to interject, if I may, just to say that your statement is that it's quite a wild thing, that it's like so sweeping it for everybody. But if you do look at the background of these endorsers, one was homeless, went to Harvard. One was no exam passes, racist, bullied, et cetera, et cetera. He now runs a $60 million business. Billy Baxter in the army, blinded while at service, and then he turns his life around. He's now on stage. He's a motorcycle stuntman. I mean, you know, he rides horses. He's blind. Yeah, fantastic stuff. So it is for people of every single background. You know, it is your wildest dream. For me, my dream was to have children, and I had everything else. That was my huge thing, and it meant the world to me to achieve that. And you can hear them in the back. So I think I'm called out. Do come to the website We'll support you every single way of the journey. I send you love. My time is up. I send you love. Bye.
Bye, Pam. Dale, tell us about your website and how to get the book.
Absolutely, Steve. Again, it's kind of like the title of our book. It's www.surfingrainbows.com. So surfingrainbows.com. People go there, and one of the things we haven't mentioned here, Steve, is that we wrote actually three versions of this same book, The Promise of Surfing Rainbows, because we wanted to have the information available to people of all ages. So we've got a really what we call a book for little ones or toddlers. We've got something for teens or tweens, and then we've got what we call the main book, or the grown-up version, if you will, and that's the one we're talking about here. But actually, all three of those are available at our website. So if people go to surfingrainbows.com, they will see how they can purchase all three books. They will see the endorsers. They can take a peek inside the book before they purchase, the prizes and the contests, and all those things are at our website. So they have a whole lot of fun just visiting the website.
Well, this is a lot of fun. So congratulations, Dale. The Promise of Surfing Rainbows, written by PDM Dulce. We really appreciate Dale and Pam being on Indie Book Publishing, brought to you by Balboa Press. Dale, any closing thoughts?
I guess, again, our primary thing is we want to have people have something that they can use, that it works for them, that it's well worth it for them to do. And as Pam already stated, we have put together this treasure hunt with all these prizes and incentives because we do want to help people attain whatever it is in life that they feel that they want to have in their life to have that happy life. And so we're fully committed to helping them. It's not just purchase a book and that's the end of it. We want to assist them throughout their entire process here at Surfing Rainbows.
Thank you, Dale. Thanks for being with us.
You're very welcome.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready for the Not-So-Soccer Mom Tuesday afternoons at 1 Eastern, noon Central, on TogiNet with Jill Hickey. You name it, from politics to pop culture to Jill's search for the perfect bronzer and chicken salad. The Not-So-Soccer Mom will weigh in on it all. The sentence, "I have no opinion about that," is one that Jill has never uttered. In the early 90s, Jill finally decided to put her thoughts, opinions, mom advice, love of pop culture, hummus, and Starbucks, working out, cosmetic shopping, and politics into an actual website, and thus NotSoSoccerMom.com was born. Shortly after her fourth child, a boy, Jerome, now she's really got tons of topics to share with you. This is Laugh Out Loud Funny, and we're not kidding. What's a loud Nebraska girl who lived in Little Rock for many years and now is up in the Northeast doing? Chronicling her opinions on everything. The wheels aren't off yet, but it's close. It's the Not-So-Soccer Mom with Jill Hickey, Tuesday afternoons at 1 Eastern, noon Central, on TogiNet.com. Innovation and insight, problems and solutions, capitalizing on your ideas and efforts. That's all a part of Changing the World, One Invention at a Time, with Rick Rowe. Thursday evenings at 6, 5 Central, on TogiNet.com. Rick will be sharing stories of innovation, invention, inspiration, and overcoming obstacles with guests who have been there, done that, and are doing that. Rick will be asking the right questions, helping you identify the real problems, and showing you how to act on your ideas by increasing consumer confidence, and more importantly, increasing your confidence to act on your ideas. For even more information, go to ThinkTech, that's T-E-K, globally.com. Then join us as Rick and his guests teach us how to develop new ideas and create new products, new businesses, new jobs. And together, let's get our economy growing again. It's Changing the World, One Invention at a Time, with author and inventor Rick Rowe. Thursday evenings at 6, 5 Central, on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, The God Whom Moses Knew, a novel. And the author is Roger J. Nelson, and Roger joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, brought to you by Westbow Press. Hello, Roger.
Hi, how are you?
Well, this is the great story. Many have seen it
of course, through the great, on the big screen, the Ten Commandments, Charlton Heston, Moses. You know, every time we think of Moses, probably his face comes into our mind because it seems like it plays every year, doesn't it, on TV? And but, you know, that isn't necessarily, obviously, all the right scenes that we should have in our mind. So what you've done here, it seems, is to really take us on this journey to try to be as accurate as possible and bring it to life, right?
Right.
Now, why choose this? This is an incredible challenge to write a novel concerning Moses and the children of Israel leaving Egypt.
Well, I think it was not my choice, really. I was on a skiing trip with three other men in Colorado a number of years ago, and I took a day off, opened the Bible, and found the Book of Numbers, and I was fascinated by the stories in there. Taught a course at Sunday school, and then eventually decided this is information that the lay public doesn't have, and it was so exciting to me, I thought I'd share it.
Tell us your view of Moses. Give us some of your view, of course. Let's start out with the way he was raised. Who did he think he was, and why did he think he was?
Well, the book of Josephus, who wrote about that time, pictured him as a military commander, and I think that's the way I took it, too, although it's not so stated in the Bible. I think Moses was a man who was unusual at birth, raised in a very pompous society, probably didn't know who he was as a Jew, and eventually God intervened in his life and began to make him of the kind of man that he wanted to be. Moses was human, with human failings, and God decided to make this man more humble, did so, and then made him a leader of people who were rebellious and who were released from slavery. I think Moses was a fantastic human being and followed God, but had his human failings like we do, too.
How do you portray the relationship that Moses had with Pharaoh?
Moses probably had two pharaohs that he dealt with. One, his pseudo-father, and then 40 years later he came back and he dealt with the offspring of that pharaoh. His relationship was... he carried a burden. God had sent him back to free these people, this number of slaves. And Moses had to confront this Pharaoh. I think he was afraid of him at first, and then he was empowered by God to bring a special light and a message and a warning to the Pharaoh. And finally succeeded through God's intervention in freeing the slaves.
In your novel, who do you have as his friends at that time of his life?
His friends? I suppose his brother Aaron was one of them, and then the 12 tribal leaders, or 13 tribal leaders, became his companions, I guess.
It must have been very difficult for Moses to make that transition from his religion, his Egyptian religion that he was raised with, and then to, follow a whole different kind of God that he probably ever imagined.
I certainly agree. It must have been, that's what I try to portray in the book, is a Moses who probably followed the Egyptian gods and believed in them, to be then intervened in his life by the God who had great plans for Moses and who was determined to carry them out.
How do you see that whole event or a time period where, how did that come to pass in your mind and in your book, suddenly Moses discovers who he is and has to accept that?
I think that it was difficult for him, and then Moses had to go back from where he was, back to Egypt, and a place where he was sought to be imprisoned for being a murderer that he had been. It was difficult for him. I think it took his quite a while before he could have developed the trust in God that he needed.
And I'm sure that's where the great scene on Mount Sinai, where God revealed himself to Moses, it had to be dramatic because Moses lived such a dramatic life.
I agree. That must have been. And I think that what I try to do in the book is to portray not only Moses and God, but to portray these people. And here they were taken out in this desert by God and Moses and then abandoned for 6 weeks. The fear that they had, the frustration, the anxiety that they had, and how did they respond to a God in their midst who has determined to save them? And so the whole Sinai situation was, to me, compelling and fascinating.
And how big the population do you determine that are following Moses at this point?
Well, the Bible says there were 600,000 men, and I suppose if you had children and women, it's going to be up close to 2 million. Those are the figures of the Bible. Many people have disputed those. But the Bible says that they were as numerous as the sands of the sea. And it was Moses thinks he had to take all the fish in the ocean to feed them. The Bible also says that they were as numerous as the whole Egyptian population. So I use the figure 600,000 in the book.
Well, that's obviously when we think, how would we do in that kind of environment? You know, be one or have one family in this incredible, huge, it's like a city on the move, a big city on the move, huge city.
That's right. You would wonder what you're doing. You're herding all your animals across the desert and depending upon God to supply food and in the form of manna and water and to be to try and develop a trust in God when you didn't have one and you were confronted by all temptations and the attacks by foreign nations while you're on your move. It must have been a trying time for them.
And of course, within the population are those who are enemies of Moses. They don't agree. They don't want to follow.
That's right. There were all the Israelites, and then there was a mixed group of people who followed Moses also out of Egypt too. We probably were tired of the Egyptians, and maybe they were attracted to this new God, and they were thorns in Moses' side for 40 years.
Tell us about Joshua.
Joshua, to me, is a fascinating character. I took the little bits and pieces of the Bible, certainly not the book of Joshua, but I took the bits and pieces of his childhood and made him into Moses' servant, and then later on, 40 years later, when Moses comes back, he continues to be a servant of God, a powerful leader, and yet one who trusted in God probably nearly as much as Moses, and became a leader, took over when Moses was denied the opportunity to lead the people across the Jordan River into the promised land of Canaan. Quite a character.
And under the tutelage of Moses, I mean, he must have had not only great respect for Moses and willing to follow him, but great love for Moses.
I certainly agree. Great love and great respect. And I'm sure he felt a burden when God turned the whole population over to him and when Moses died. But as God said, you know, pay attention to me, Joshua, and I will be as good to you as I was to Moses, which must have been reassuring to him.
And you put God speaks to Moses mouth to mouth over 100 times.
It does say when, particularly God, when God confronted Miriam, Moses' sister, after she had started an uprising against Moses, and God says, who are you, Miriam, to talk to me? I talked to Moses mouth to mouth. And I think we're recorded in there over 100 times God spoke to Moses, and probably a lot more that are not recorded.
So why do you think the people, obviously out of 2 million, let's say, there are tens of thousands that are rebelling, and of course God deals with them, why? Why would they do that?
Why would they rebel? Is that what the question
right.
is?
Right, yes.
Well, I think that there were some of them, I'm sure, who were satisfied and had compromised their life in Egypt under slavery, and maybe some of the artisans were treated fairly well, and they didn't particularly want to leave. It's hard for any of us to change, and they didn't probably want to leave Egypt. But they came out, and there were a number of them who resented Moses. They didn't like his leadership. They didn't like where they were going. They spent 40 years wandering around in the desert after they had failed, after they had betrayed God when they were supposed to invade Canaan the first time. And these were people who were probably like you and me, Mr. Jorgensen, who were faced with fears and anxieties. What do we do?
So it's becomes, it sounds like almost like a political problem of the time.
Yeah, it does, I think. If you put God on one side of the equation and the people on the other side, and he had his determination. He knew what he wanted to do with the people. He knew the only life that they could have that would be good. And so he had to politicize the people a little bit, I suppose.
And would one of the themes be of, in order to have true freedom, how we have to have true faith in God?
Yes, and I think it's interesting that God would manipulate other nations, but he just wooed his own people during that time to come to have faith in him, and he did everything he could to get them to trust in him. And finally they even turned on him at the time of the invasion of Canaan, and said, Moses, you and God stay here. We're going back to Egypt.
Tell us about the poisonous snakes, that story.
Well, I think God had, all the way along, God had provided for the people, but then he invited them, asked them to trust in him. And when they didn't, he would punish them, because he had a goal in mind for them, and he had to discipline them. Anybody God loves, he disciplines. And so he had all these punishments going on. And then finally, when they failed him again, he sent these snakes among the people to bite them. But he didn't take the snakes away. He finally said, Moses, you build a bronze serpent and put it on a stake about in the center of the camp. And those who are bitten can come to it and be healed. And I think this is the first time that God says, I want you to have faith in me and you can be healed. And he did heal their wounds and heal those who came to him. And it was God just saying, you must have faith in me, and let's see how you do.
And it was a simple thing to do at that moment. They just had to look, as I understand.
That's the way I understand it, too. I'm sure there were many who didn't. In the book, I even portray a snake doctor who plays a role in all of this.
So human nature is human nature no matter the time, right?
That's right. And I think that was one of the things that attracted me to this whole episode, was the temptation we all have to fail God, and yet the great benefits if we can only believe in him.
Any closing thoughts?
No, I just hope that this book probably is not for everybody, but those who read it, I think, will gain a greater interest and greater knowledge of the Bible, and hopefully greater faith.
Well, tell us how to get the book, The God Whom Moses Knew, a novel, author Roger J. Nelson. Roger, tell us how to get your book.
I think it's published on demand. It can be gotten through any bookstore if you go and ask for it. here in St. Louis. It goes through Cokesbury, and you can buy it through Amazon, Kindle, Barnes & Noble. Just go in and ask for it.
Thank you for joining us on Indie Book Publishing, brought to you by Westbow Press. Thank you, Roger.
Okay, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Mark Lipinski is coming to TogiNet. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, a live two-hour show Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on TogiNet.com. Creative Mojo. It's fun, entertaining, informative, inspirational, and illuminating. Lipinski has worked on such shows as Oprah, The View, The Joan Rivers Show, and Ricky Lake. He's busy, but he's got the drive to share with Creative Mojo, dedicated to the modern crafter and crafting lifestyle. Dive into the info and enjoy everything from celebs to entertainment news to recipes, quilting and needlework, knitting, painting, woodworking, Christmas crafts, and so much more. This show boldly encourages you to discover and harness your own creative spirit by living creatively every day. For more on Mark and the show, check out marklipinski.com. Don't miss the fun. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on toginet.com.
Youth was sad, right? Cause he had a deaf, ear, mommy and dad, right? But that ain't the case, nope. It wasn't his fate, nope. The wolves never struggled to communicate, ha. Y'all wave your hands, look who's on, yeah. It's the Coda Man Keith, and he's number one.
It's That Keith Wan Show on TogiNet.com, Wednesday nights at 8, 7 Central. Every week, That Keith Wan Show will have guests that share their experiences, expertise, opinions, and personal lives with us to hopefully help us better understand others. The topics and guests will come from the American Sign Language community. For more on Keith Wan and the show, go to his website, KeithWan.com. Listen with an open mind and willingness to learn and help with the cultural bridge.
Number one, Keith's number one. Everybody clap because the Coda Man's on. Number one, Keith's number one. Everybody clap because the Coda Man's on.
Don't miss That Keith Wan Show. Wednesday nights at 8, 7 Central on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, God Took His Coffee Black, and the author is G.W. Drum, and Jerry joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, brought to you by Author Hive. Hello, Jerry.
Hi, Steve. Great to be with you.
Well, good to have you here, and this is a very, very out-of-the-box kind of view of spiritual things, of religious beliefs, of literally who is God. And it's always good to take a different look and just challenge our thinking and our help us to develop greater faith. Let me read what you have written, Jerry. You say this: if you could ask God just one question face to face, what would it be? A new book gives readers the chance to take a journey with an ordinary man as he encounters God in the form of various past celebrities. In his book, God Took His Coffee Black, author G.W. Drum brings readers into an old-time diner on a snowy Christmas Eve, where Jerry gets a visit from God. Over the next year, he receives monthly visits from God in celebrity form, each famous identity, one surprise after the next. Whatever prompted you to come up with a storyline like this? This is great, Jerry.
Well, what motivated this was just some questions and concerns I had regarding religion. The questions that I had were obvious ones that everyone has, like, what's heaven like? Do we feel pain when we die? Or are there mosquitoes in heaven? But the questions are separate from the concerns that I had.
Now, why the diner?
Diner is just something in my imagination that I thought everybody would be able to identify with, be able to picture in their mind.
Okay, you know, when I first read this overview of what you've written about your book, I kind of thought of Scrooge and the visits from the different spirits.
Yeah, that is one of my all-time favorite movies.
So that kind of was in the back of your mind as you played with this kind of thematic approach.
Right, because all of the celebrities that that I do have conversations with do address a different concern that I have in my own life.
Now, one of the themes you write, organized religion would be perceived as a guilt-driven machine, and people are really starting to question that.
Yes. I think, and to be quite honest, I think that God isn't a judgmental, vindictive, havoc-wreaking entity. Never made sense to me as I was growing up to go to church and worship God, saying things like, "Oh, God is great," and "God is love." And then hear Bible readings from the Old Testament about plagues and how he would wipe out a whole city in one fell swoop, or even the whole earth in a great flood. And the Old Testament is just full of stories like that, and it just never made sense to me. And I think guilt is a very powerful force, and that fills the pews. And that's not, it's not all organized religion. It's just there are some that tend to use fear and guilt to create job security.
Well, there's a number of famous celebrities and famous people. Unfortunately, some of them the famous because of the atrocity that they committed, but famous anyway. Why did you choose, you know, the ones you chose? And we'll talk about some of them. There's about 10 of them.
Well, they were all a variety of different accomplishments in society. Anybody from Moses to Elvis is brought up in the book, and that scope of what they contributed to the world and how they could address me and my concerns.
And this is done in a conversational approach.
Very much so. I wanted people to be actually there in the booth with me, talking with whoever it is, happens to be that month.
So this is monthly visits, as you put it, from God in a celebrity form, famous person, and one surprise after the next. So let's just start off with why Moses came to see you, and tell us about who he looked like. Well, I think everyone would probably guess, wouldn't they?
It would be a good guess, and Moses actually looked like Charlton Heston. What a shock.
Yeah, what a shock. But why did he come? Why did he come to talk to you?
Well, because I had struggles with what the Ten Commandments actually mean, and I think God felt that the best person to explain what the Ten Commandments really mean was to have Moses come have coffee with me.
Another theme in your book, you say that right and wrong is decided by society and not God.
Right. That would fall under the God isn't a judgmental God. I think society will give you a gauge as to what is right and what is wrong. The Roman Catholic Church would have the same approach. For example, many years ago, it was a sin to eat meat on Friday, and now that's okay. So I think society shifts that line of where right and wrong is.
Well, when people think of famous people, it wouldn't surprise anyone that Elvis would come to see you.
Elvis is my favorite singer, so that's how I fit him in.
And what kind of message did he bring? Why was he coming to see you?
Well, I initially said, "Oh, you must be here to talk to me about music." And he said, "No, I'm here to talk to you about spirituality." And spirituality was something that was big in his life, and not many people really knew that. I mean, he did gospel music, but he had a very spiritual side.
Now, you also talk about a theme, bad things happening in the world are not God's displeasure with the world.
Right. Bad things that happen are just that, bad things that happen. Catastrophes, well, God is there and didn't cause those things, but if you have to look at the good that comes out of things like 9/11 or Katrina. Good always comes out of what we perceive as bad, and we just have to look a little harder for it.
Well, that's, since you brought it up, one of the more controversial visitors, it deals with 9/11. Tell us about that visitor.
Oh boy, that was a shock when I saw who was sitting across from me. It was Muhammad Atta, and he was the lead terrorist during the 9/11 attacks, and I just wasn't prepared to see him sitting across from me because I wasn't prepared to have him be in heaven, and I thought that he ought to be shoveling coal for the pitchfork-toting guy in a red suit.
Another theme that you talk about is we are put on earth for a purpose, and it's our job or mission to find out what that is.
That is absolutely right. I've heard a quote once that says the two saddest words that we can utter at the time of our death are the words, if only. So it's our mission or job to find out what makes us tick. What is it that we can bring to the world?
What did Marilyn Monroe want to share with you?
Sex.
That's it.
Well, actually, that's it.
Okay.
What it was is she wanted to talk to me not about my obsession with sex, but about society's obsession with sex, and that if we're not careful, it will get more out of hand than what it is. And it's just something that she felt that we as a society needed to know, that there's some danger there.
Another theme, God wants us to be happy and prosperous. The poor can't help the poor.
That is true. God wants us to live a happy and prosperous life. I really believe that because, money isn't bad. Love of money can be bad. We should all love having money and the good it can do, but problems arise when that love of money becomes an obsession, and that obsession is what gives money a bad rap. But that's true. The poor can't help the poor like they could if they had money.
Now, it must have been a lot of fun when Jack and Bob showed up. Tell us who Jack and Bob are.
Jack Benny and Bob Hope. I got double teamed by those two guys 1 month, and I thought, oh, they're going to talk to me about my sense of humor. And actually, they were talking about quantum physics, which was a shock.
Quantum physics?
Yeah, the whole thought is energy, time, what time really means.
Hmm. Well, and time is also a out-of-the-box question because you talk about all the hype over the thought of the world ending in 2012. What are you telling us?
I'm sure a lot of the listeners know that date of December 12th, 2012, is a date that the Mayan calendar ends. Okay, so that said, God actually jokes with me in the book and says that the reason the Mayan calendar ends on 12/21 of 2012 is that the Mayans just ran out of twos for their calendar to make it to the 22nd. That is a date that I don't think the world is going to end. I really don't. But what I do think is happening and will be happening even more is that there's going to be a shift in consciousness. meaning I think what we're going to do as a society is become more spiritual, see God in everybody, see that God is in, you know, everything that happens. Good or bad is our interpretation.
Well, you had visits from Adam and Eve, Thomas Edison, Abe Lincoln, and let's just finish on the last, this most important visitor, Jesus.
The big gun. That was a chapter that was kind of a culmination of all the previous chapters saying, okay, let's have a review and see what you've learned. And it was a recap that I gave Jesus, and Jesus would then expound on some of the things that that I had had issue with over the course of the year. And, you know, heaven was one of them. Bad people, how do we determine who a bad person is? You know, I was asked if I believed that there was a judgment day, and I said, well, I don't know. And I was told that judgment day is not a day where we stand in front of a white-haired, white-bearded guy with a dusty book of deeds, but that we judge our lives ourselves. And sometimes I think we could be harsher on ourselves than God could be anyway.
Well, usually we are, aren't we, when we're yep. asked to discipline ourselves, or as a, you know, as sometimes as parents we ask our children, well, what do you think I should do?
You know? And that's exactly right. I mean, I have three sons, and if one of them did something absolutely horrific, wouldn't I still love him? So I'd have to, you know, say that if we're all children of God, wouldn't we want the same, you know, of God?
Well, you say you haven't forgotten your religious upbringing. You're the son of a retired Lutheran minister and a former church deacon yourself. And you say you have just found a more comfortable way to look at God. And that's what your book is about.
That's it in a nutshell, Steve. I really wanted to get across the fact that if we don't have a God who's judgmental and vindictive, that we can look at each other, you know, as children of God and have a totally different outlook.
The title of the book, God Took His Coffee Black, the author, G.W. Drum. Jerry, tell us how to get your book.
You can get it at www.GodTookHisCoffeeBlack.com. Or if you have a Kindle, it's at Amazon.com in the Kindle section.
Well, thank you for joining us on this special edition of Indie Book Publishing, brought to everyone by Author Hive. Thank you so much, Jerry.
Steve, it's been a great pleasure talking with you.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.